That's Perek Tonight of Yonah, and tonight we're going to see the denouement of the story. The truth is that Yonah does not end with a very big, dramatic climax. It really is kind of anticlimactic at the end. So it's a little bit difficult to understand how the Sefer ends, and we'll try to make a little bit head or tail of that, see if it's possible to do so. In the meantime, let's start the Perek. Vayera el Yonah, Yonah ara gdola. It was very bad in Yonah's eyes. He became very upset. Vayicharon, he got upset. He was angry. And it wasn't just, it was bad, and he got angry. So the question is, what did Yonah know? In other words, what caused Yonah to have these feelings? And how was he aware of what was going on? And I know the question is a little bit vague, but from the answer it will become clear what I'm referring to. The Radak says that he knew with a nevuah that was it. Hashem was not going to destroy the city, even though the 40 days were not up. He knew Hashem was not going to destroy the city, and he was upset about that. So Rabbi Amanel says he was literally depressed. He had a depression. He felt a vague sense of premonition, I guess, would be a way to describe it, and a depression that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was not going to destroy the city, because really he was looking forward to the city. He liked the violence. But really he was looking forward to the city being destroyed, and it was not going to be destroyed. Rashi, on the other hand, puts a little bit of a more selfish spin on this, that he would be called a Navi Sheker, and he was upset because he didn't want to be called a Navi Sheker, that he was prophesying falsely, that he had prophesied the imminent downfall of Nineveh, and lo and behold, Nineveh would not be overturned. The Radak says that he was upset for the reason that we learned previously, that the tshuva would put Am Yisrael in negative light, because here the Goyim are doing tshuva so quickly, and he himself, and Am Yisrael, never does tshuva, or very hard to get on himself to do tshuva. The Rambam has a very interesting spin on this, which continues along to the lines of the Rambam on the previous parak, which are, the Rambam holds, as you, if you recall, that they never did a complete tshuva. All they did tshuva on was the chomos. Avodah Zarah, Gilead Arayos, that they still were involved in, whatever other averus they had. Only from the theft, from the social crimes, that they do tshuva. So the Malvim says, Yonah was upset, he said, listen God, had they done tshuva on all their chatoim, on Avodah Zarah, Gilead Arayos, the whole kit and kaboodle, I would be very happy. I would feel that the destiny which you sent me to fulfill was a good one, a positive one, I did good things, and that would have left me feeling just fine and dandy. However, that's not the case. What happened, in fact, is that you allowed these goyim off the hook, despite the fact that they were still committing more and more averus. Not theft anymore, but other averus, yes. This indicates to me, says Yonah, that the only reason you needed this tshuva was not to get them to be big oivdei Hashem, you know, make them chasidim and tzaddikim, but in order to be able to justify how they could possibly be the ones to destroy the northern kingdom of the Aseret HaShevatim. So therefore, you needed a minimal degree of tshuva on their part, just in order to allow them to retain their position as the staff with which to beat the Jewish people. So the Malbim says, Yonah says, you know, had I known had the purpose been to get them to do complete tshuva, I would never have run away in the first place. But since a partial tshuva was sufficient, I know, and I'm proven right retroactively as well, that the only reason you wanted them to do tshuva is just in order to make sure that they'll be suitable for destroying the Jewish people. For that type of role, I would not have wanted to be sent, and it's not fair that you send me to fulfill such a role. I wanted no part of this, and now I'm upset about it. So Yonah was very upset about, according to most Mefarshim, to sum it up, he was very upset that Nineveh was left and had done tshuva, partial tshuva only, in order to destroy the Jewish people. And ultimately, can you imagine, Yonah? Yonah in this situation, Yonah from his perspective, he feels like he has just saved the Chveis Hitler of the next generation from certain death in order to enable them to destroy Klal Yisrael. What a terrible feeling. That's really what Yonah felt at this point. And the truth is, how can we, you know, it sounds justified on Yonah's part. He says, this is what you wanted me to do, this is my destiny in this world. I want no part of this. Yes, he was aware that this country would come along and destroy Klal Yisrael. And that's what the parrot goes on to describe here. Vayispalel el Hashem, he did a pasuk base. He davened to Kodesh Baruch Hu. Vayemar, and he said, On Hashem, excuse me, God. Haro zedvari, was this not my words? Ad hayosi al mi al mosi, as long as I'm still on my land. And that is why I went as fast as I could to run away to Tarshish. Because I knew that you are a God who is full of grace and of mercy, who curtails his anger for a long time, in other words, doesn't immediately smite the evildoers, and then you have great pity on them. And you change your mind and renege on promises to do evil quite readily. And therefore, Vatah Hashem, now God, Kachnos nafshi mimeni, take my soul mimeni, ki tov mosi mechayoi, my death is better than my life. Why? Yonah feels he's like, you know, he has this Midas touch here. Everything, whatever he does, he ruins things for Klal Yisrael. Says, my life is more damaging to Klal Yisrael than my death. You should do away with me, if for no other reason that Am Yisrael should not be left continuously damaged by my presence, by my existence in this world.
The ten
northern tribes, subsequently, not immediately thereafter, but subsequently, yes. And had Nineveh been destroyed, of course, they would not have been able to do that. Yes. That may be true, but Yonah feels that he's now instrumental. Now, it's true, it could have been somebody else, but Yonah feels he's instrumental in setting up the setting for this ultimately to happen. So, yes, you know, he could have consoled himself, said, it wouldn't be Asher, it would be Bavel, but still, he felt rotten as is. Now, in this pasuk, and the pasuk is interesting, Ibn Ezra says, at first I wanted to make a whole drush out of this, but then the Radak took the wind out of my sails. The Radak said, even Ezra says, that when Yonah said he wanted to die, it's like Moshe Rabbeinu said, "Mecheini na misifrecha asher kosafta," right? Like Moshe Rabbeinu said, "Erase me from my your book," right? So I wanted to say, Yonah here, just like when Moshe Rabbeinu said that, he had some deep meaning, and he wanted to atone for Klal Yisrael, and he wanted to make sure that his losing his greatness should come instead of Klal Yisrael's losing their preeminent position in the world, and all sorts of other connotations are attached to Moshe Rabbeinu's being erased from the Chumash when Moshe Rabbeinu said that. So I thought for sure that Ibn Ezra has some agenda like that, and that it wasn't just anyone requesting death, but he was requesting that his death be a kapara for Klal Yisrael. However, the Radak, who follows the same lines as Ibn Ezra, makes clear that the only comparison to Mecheini Na is in the respect that Yonah did not want to see the imminent destruction of Klal Yisrael by Ashur. In other words, that there's no covert comparison between Yonah and Moshe Rabbeinu. The comparison is only in that he doesn't want to, he can't bear to see what's going to happen to Klal Yisrael when Ashur gets their hands on the northern kingdom. As I say, the bottom line is that Yonah does not appreciate a responsibility of life that ends up just being Peronis to Klal Yisrael. Yes? Yes, but he doesn't want to be the tool. That's similar to what Dr. Spadell was asking. Dr. Spadell asked, so if it wouldn't be Asher, it would be Bavel. So what does Yonah feel so bad about?
No, and you're would be a
right, and you're asking that. Right, but why Yonah doesn't want to be the instrument? What's the word I'm looking for? But I can't his messenger, his tool, you know, is shliach to do it some other way. I don't want to be the one. And you know, in Judaism we ascribe some degree of culpability to the shliach as well. We say megalgin zchusai de zakai v'chiyuvai de chaya. If a merit comes to you, it comes to you by somebody worthy. If a demerit comes to you, it comes to you by somebody unworthy. So Yonah obviously feels that if he's going to be the one to be the shliach, then there's some guilt by association attached to him. Either because of some preceding the bad thing which he did, or this in and of itself is something which is damaging to his position. And therefore Yonah does not want to have any part of this. Of course, you know, now for this, for Ashur, it's too late, but Yonah says, look, I see the reason why you created me is to be the part of the staff which smites Am Yisrael for their sins. Forget it. For such a reason to be created, just do away with me. That's what he says. Well, you see, it's not explicit in the Pesukim that way. The Pesukim says, either say, this nation, v'imayin mechinin ha-mesivachar shakosavta. So, Pashup Shad is like, just like Ibn Ezra says here, that that's it, you know, either you say Am Yisrael or kill me because I can't bear, eradicate me because I can't bear to see Am Yisrael go. However, there, by Moshe Rabbeinu, there's several layers of meaning there, which the Mefarshim and the Midrashim give it. For instance, we know that the klal of Moshe Rabbeinu was partially fulfilled. He was erased from one parsha in the Torah. Which parsha was he erased from? The Tzaveh. So obviously there was some instrument of kapara which had to do with Moshe Rabbeinu actually being erased. And he was erased from one of the parshas as a result. So that's one thing. And besides that, Mecheni no Misifrcha is much more than Moshe Rabbeinu had to have said. Moshe Rabbeinu could have just said, Hargeni no Harog, kill me, which in fact is part of his statement. Why do you have to say also the additional layer of Mecheni no Misifrcha? Write me out of the Chumash. Okay, let him be killed and let him be mentioned in the Chumash. So if there's another nation which gets the Torah, so let them get the Chumash with Moshe Rabbeinu in it. So there are obviously different layers of meaning there, which one could, if we, you know, tonight was the night for that, we could go into that. But as I say, when the Ibn Ezra and Radak make the comparison, they're quite clearly making the comparison only to the aspect in which Moshe Rabbeinu said that if you don't save them, just kill me because I can't bear to see it. And it's a very limited comparison. Yes.
I could think of a...
I never actually gave a distinct talk on the concept of Misas Tzadikim and Chaperes. However, it does exist in our religion. We do have a concept of Misas, famous Maisa with Rabbi Ochanan. Rabbi Ochanan said, when Rabbi Ochanan Wasserman in the Second World War was taken out to be killed, and he and his yeshiva were taken out, and wherever they were, Branovich, or wherever they were already. Yeah, no, I don't know if ultimately that's where they killed. I think they're in Kovner and Kelm. They came from Branovich, right. So they had to kill, they said. So Rabbi Ochanan gave a speech, and he said that in heaven, they obviously consider us, this is a paraphrase, but more or less accurate, in heaven they obviously consider us to be tzaddikim, because we have been chosen to be karbanos for Am Yisrael. And just like a karban cannot have a machsheves pigul, in other words, one cannot have idle or impure thoughts when making a korban, so too we cannot have any idle or impure thoughts when they take us out to slaughter us. And we should have in mind, said Rabbi Chanan, that our death should be a schus for our brothers and sisters in America. So it's a remarkable statement made by Rabbi Chanan. What does it mean? Obviously, he was stating that there was going to be some, if you wish, vicarious protection by the death of the tzaddikim for other members of Klal Yisrael. The difference between our religion and their religion, there are several differences, many, many differences. But the major difference in this respect here is that Misa Tzaddikim B'chaperes means that in Olam Hazeh, the cumulative punishment required for the Jewish nation is diminished. However, it doesn't help you to get to Olam Haba. By that I mean that if a tzaddik dies and the generation suffers through his loss, then the generation's punishment in this world as a whole will be diminished because they underwent already the suffering of their leader, of their tzaddik, of their posek having died. However, when you as an individual, after that, get to the Olam HaEmes, the fact that he died 5 years ago ain't going to do you no good. You'll get the same Gehenna, Gan Eden, regardless. Doesn't do you any good. We stand no merit. So that's the difference between us and the competition. In the competition, he died on the cross for their sins, and therefore, by accepting him, they get to heaven, you know, through the express lane. So we don't have such a thing. By us, it's each and every individual on their own, through their own toil and effort. So that's a major difference between Misas Tzadikim B'chaperes in our religion and in their religion. There are differences as well, but that's the primary one. Okay, let's do Pasuk Dalet. Vayomer Hashem said, Haytev Choralach, is a now most mafreshim say hayteiv cholach means is it really rotten for you? Does it bother you that much? The Malbim says a very interesting thing here. The Malbim says vayomer Hashem hayteiv was the nevuah a positive one? That cholach that you're upset. In other words, Hashem is saying, when do I not renege on nevuos? On positive nevuos, on heitev nevuos, good ones. Was this a Torah heitev nevuah? This is a negative nevuah. The nevuah I gave you to say was that Ninveh would be overturned. And we know HaKadosh Baruch Hu's principle is that he does renege on negative nevuos. So therefore, what Hashem is telling Yena is, you shouldn't consider yourself a Navi Sheker. Or you shouldn't be afraid of people calling you Navi Sheker because of this incident. Because everybody knows that only on Heitev, on good Nevuah says Hashem not renege, on bad Nevuah such as the one I gave you for Ninveh, Hashem does very often renege. So that's why Yonah, that the word Heitev has a different meaning here according to the Malbim. Okay. Vayetzi Yonah minoyer. Yonah left the city. Vayetzi mikedem leon, he sat and he went and dwelled, took up lodging, I'm not sure exactly how. He sat. We can't lay on the east side of the city.
He
camped. Well, he camped. Okay, good word. But Yasso Sham Suka, he made for himself there a lean to. The Malim says it was like didn't even have a roof, it was a screen. But a windscreen. Vayeshev Tachter Batzel. And he sat underneath it in the shade. In other words, he used to move it around to position it so it gave him shade. Ada Sheyrem Maya Bayir till he saw what would be in the city. Now, all the Mepharshim say, wait a minute, he saw they were doing tshuva. So the Mepharshim say, yeah, we're hoping at least something negative should happen to them. Something bad should befall them. You know, at least to some extent, his divorce should be fulfilled. So he was waiting, hoping, you know, at least, you know, something negative. And of course, he had 40 days to wait. Vayiman Hashem Elokim. And Hashem Elokim, you know, I didn't notice before. I should have noticed when I was preparing. Here, too, we're switching over. Let's see if we can follow it. Till now, it's all about Hashem. Yudke Vavke, right? Now, it's Hashem Elokim. Later on, let's peek ahead a minute. In Pasuk Zayin, Ches. In Pasuk Zayin, Ches, and Tes, it's just Elokim. And then in Pasuk Yud, it goes back to Yudke Vavke again. So there's got to be something going on here. I didn't notice that before. All right, let's read the psukim and see if we can figure out what's going on, why the change in names all of a sudden. Vayiman Hashem Elokim Kikoyon. HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought up a kikoyon. And nobody knows exactly what a kikoyon is. It's either a type of grass or bamboo type of thing which grows very high, or a type of gourd. I believe that's the more and more modern translation as well. And hey, man, it was some sort of tree which went over Yonah's head. Vayamel Yonah went over Yonah Tzel Arosho to be a shade over his head, Latzilim Arosho to save him from his bad fortune, because as the Malbim says, it was a very flimsy lean-to he had there, and therefore it wasn't really keeping him cool. Vayismach Yonah Araki Koyon Simcha Gdoila, and all of a sudden Yonah gets very, very happy on the Kikoyon. This is the focus of his happiness. So the Ibn Ezra says here, it's cute Ibn Ezra, that why is Kikoyon necessary? Because Yonah's skin was sensitive for being in a fish for so long. So therefore he was, you know, couldn't take the sun, so that's why he needed the Kikoyon. The Malbim says, as I said before, the Yonah only had a screen, and he took the Kikoyon as a sign that he should wait. So he figured until, if God is giving me a Kikoyon, God is giving me this as a shelter, it must be that something bad is going to happen. And therefore, you should wait a while, because some promise is going to befall the city. And I think that's very meduyak in the pasuk, it's very exact in that it says, Vayismach Yonah ala kikoyon simcha gedoila. He didn't rejoice about what was happening in the city. What was happening in the city was making him downright miserable, because they were doing all that tshuva in there. He was happy on the kikoyon. Ah! He had this tree. That was the focus of his great happiness. Everything else was making him miserable.
Did you say that he didn't
have
given him the
Kikoyon?
Happy that it grew.
That could be. That's a good shot. In other words, he wasn't cognizant of the Ashgacha involved. That's an interesting point. It's probably true, because it didn't say thanks Hashem for the Kikoyon. That's a good point. Do you want to say something?
Well,
he didn't want to die in a horrible way. He wouldn't mind if God took him away quickly, but he didn't want to lie there in the sun and get sunstroke. That he wasn't willing to do. Vayimana Elokim Toras. Now, here again, before it said Hashem Elokim, and now it says Elokim. Only Elokim. Vayimana Elokim Toras Balos HaShachar. HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought up a worm the next morning, early the next morning. Lemacharas, the next day. Vatach Zakikoyon. And Vayimana, by the way, is used here in all these psukim, and I think it has to do with the fact that these were miraculous things like mon, right? They came from heaven. So Vayimana Elokim Tolas Balos HaShachar. He brought up a worm when the morning time, then Lemacharas the next day. Vatach Zakikoyon, and it smote the Kikoyon. Vayivash. And it got dried up, shriveled. Vayikizrach HaShemesh, and it came about when the sun rose. Vayimana Elokim Ruach Kodim Charishis. HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought about an east wind, Charishis. Charishis, most of the Persians say, is a very noisy wind. It's a very noisy and hot wind. It's a very powerful wind, the wind from the east. I guess it's what we call today Chamsin. Vatach HaShemesh Arosh Yonah, and the sun beat down on the head of Yonah, Vayisaraf, and he grew faint. Vayishalas nafshol amus, and he again asked for his soul to die. Vayoymer, and he said, Tov mosi mechayoy. Better that I die than I live. Again, here, he's saying the same thing he said in Pasuk Gimel, but I think that here it's a much more limited expression. In other words, he's saying, not because of my destiny in life, but because, gee, this is a miserable situation to be in, and therefore I'd rather die than continue to live out to be in this heat, under this terrible travail. Vayomer Elokim. The Apostle David said, Vayomer Hashem. The Apostle Tez says, Vayomer Elokim al Yonah. Elokim said to Yonah, Hayitev chorel chora kikoyon. Are you indeed very upset? And here even the Mavi agrees that Otev means very or greatly upset. Kikoyon on the tree. Vayomer, and he said, Hayitev, very much so. Chorel, am I upset about this ad mavis until I'm ready to die. Now, before we go further, this is really bothering me now, why the Elokim is used in this context. So I would say, off the top of my head, again, because I didn't notice what I was preparing, so in the first few psukim, we're talking about Hashem's chesed vis-a-vis Nineveh, right? The fact that Hashem had mercy on Nineveh, and that clearly is from Midas Yudke Vavke. Yonah was upset at that manifestation of Yudke Vavke, because Goyim are not supposed to enjoy that type of manifestation. This is something which is antithetical to the Matzias of the Jewish nation, to the Matzias of Goyim. Goyim is supposed to be completely under Midas Adin. Right? They live and die by Midas Adin, as we saw in the previous Perek, with Elokim, 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 constantly when it came to their tshuva. And yet here, it was a Midah of Yudke, it seemed to Yonah at least, that it was a Midah of Yudke Vavke. And therefore he felt it was not fair. Now, Yonah himself, after that discussion, which ended in Pasuk Dalet, in the next few psukim, beginning with Pasuk Vav and ending in Pasuk Tes, Yonah's relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is measured by the Midah of Elokim. First, we begin with Hashem Elokim, but then in Pasuk Vav, but then it goes on to completely discuss Elokim. And I think, again, I'm not sure, but I think HaKadosh Baruch Hu is showing Yonah what it means to live by the Midas Adin. By the Midas Adin, then, it's very difficult. You have to merit everything. And therefore, Yonah, you have no reason, absolutely no reason, to merit this Kikoyon. This Kikoyon comes to you out of the blue. You didn't plant it, you didn't water it, you didn't do anything for it. You don't deserve it. If you want to live with the Midah of Elokim, it's a very, very difficult thing to do. You have to realize what you're demanding, and Elokim is not a way in which you can function. It's a very difficult thing to say, a very difficult thing, and you therefore it's kind of hypocritical if you yourself cannot function under the Midah of Elokim to come and demand that it be applied indiscriminately to the goyim. In other words, that I can't have rachmonas on them whatsoever. It's not fair, not right. That's what I believe HaKadosh Baruch Hu is expressing to Yonah here. And then, after Yonah learns this lesson, after Yonah is taught this lesson, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, coming back to Pasuk Yud, Vayomer Hashem. Now it's back to Yud Kei Vav Kei. And Hashem now expresses to him the lesson of what he was doing vis-a-vis the Goyim, vis-a-vis Nineveh, and that even vis-a-vis them, sometimes he uses the Midah of Yud Kei Vav Kei. And how so? Vayomer Hashem, Hashem said, Ato chasto lechi koyon. You had mercy, well, the Malvin says chasto is a different word, you know, back in Pasuk Gimel. So he had rachanun, rachum, erech apayim, rav chesed. So the Malvin says chus ver rachim aleinu is a different expression of mercy than all the rest of them. And chus means an expression of mercy is rather used in the connotation of an expression of mercy which is in proportion to the value of an object or an entity. In other words, you have more, your chas more on something which is more precious, and your chas less on something which is less precious. So Hashem is saying to Yonah, Atah chasta, you had this form of mercy in proportion to the value of the object. Alakikoyam, on this tree, Ashura Maltabo, which you didn't work at making planting, Vlogidalto, you didn't raise it, Shabin Lailoya, it was, it came into being last night, Uvin Lailavad, in the course of the night it was lost. In other words, despite the fact that you had no investment in his Kikoyon, you had great Chisoyon on the Kikoyon. So, obviously, Vani lachus, you don't want me to be chas. Al Nineveh ha'ira gedoyla, al Nineveh the great city, asher yesh bo harbe mishdemesuri bo adam, in which there are more than 120,000 people. Asher lo yada ben yamino l'smolo, who don't know the difference between right and left, and the Malvim says it means between right and wrong, it's the same thing, ubehema rabba, and many animals. This is a very, very cryptic pasuk. What bothers me more than anything else about this pasuk is the last two words in the sefer. Who the heck cares about the animals? Right. It seems to be totally superfluous. And yet, those are the last two words in sefer Yonah. What about, it's a great, great pasuk for the ASPCA, or, you know, the animal rights people. But for those of us who eat meat, it's a little bit of a shrekaiti. I mean, who cares about the animal? The animal doesn't have any independent purpose. So there are a couple interpretations here. First of all, going back a little bit, the Radak has a very nice perspective on the universal nature of man's significance here. He says that, listen, Yoina, Hashem is saying to Yoina, listen, you think the Jews are all the only ones who are special? No, Goyim can also be special. It happens to be that most Goyim are not, because most Goyim don't have the same attitude towards Hashem, the one of being an Oved Hashem, that Jews have. But it's possible, especially among 120,000 people, to have a few people who are worthwhile saving. So the Radak learns that this is what Hashem is rebuking. Yonah is saying to Yonah that there is a man is significant regardless of who he is, even if they're not Jews. The Malbim explains the uses, as I said, Yomin Usmol, to explain why full tshuva is not required of Nineveh. Says Yomin Usmol is good and bad. He's saying, listen, Yonah, you're wondering why I let the Goyim off the hook, even though they did less tshuva than Jews would be required to do. Jews have to do tshuva on the whole kin and kaboodle, and all they have to do is tshuva on chamas. Well, it's very simple. Jews have higher responsibilities. Since Jews were given a Torah to teach them the difference between right and wrong, if they don't do what's right and do what's wrong, then in all areas, not just in chamas, then they're liable. But Goyim, I never gave a Torah to. So therefore, they're limited in their capacity to distinguish between right and wrong. So therefore, in proportion to their limited capacity, I can only demand of them less. That's that's why he stresses that they know the difference between right and wrong. Now, everyone has difficulty with the Behema Rabba. Rashi explains that Behema is a metaphor. In other words, there are a lot of people in Nineveh and also, quote-unquote, subhumans. People who are men who are like animals in that they have no cognizance of their creator. Well, I don't know. That doesn't really, though, mitigate the question very much. The bottom line is, okay, so what? What? They're certainly not worth saving. Whether... Excuse me. whether they're true behemoths or not true behemoths. If they're people like behemoths, why are they worth saving? What difference does it make? Now, at first I wanted to say this, the following, which I think is not a good interpretation, but I'll tell it to you anyway, which is that the hashkocha of Hashem vis-a-vis goyim is very similar to hashkocha vis-a-vis animals, in that Hashem has individual, specific hashkocha on Klal Yisrael, but on goyim and on animals, there's only hashkocha on the species, on the min, not necessarily on the specific, not on the specific creature. So that's why the Navi is stressing that he has a relationship with. That's why Hashem is stressing to Navi that he has a relationship with Nineveh as a city and a relationship with the behemoths as also a collective group of things. But the thing is that there also really still begs the question. I mean, all right, so his relationship vis-a-vis goyim and vis-a-vis animals is similar. But ultimately, men are men and animals are animals. And you don't save a city because of all the animals which are in it. Doesn't make any sense.
Actually, what exactly... that these people were on a lower level, illiterate, were they almost normal, were they mentally retarded? Something, I believe that what is saying here, Bahim Rabba, that means, I think the classification of the people and means they come to about the same.
No, I agree, I'm willing to concede that point. That the classification of the behemoths and men are the same. But ultimately, why would Hashem save the city?
But Hashem, I think he wanted to point out to Yonah, look at what he had needed.
Yeah.
I mean, Yonah obviously felt the traits of Babylon. I didn't see any place where he wanted that he wants to be at the point for anybody.
It's
better for me that you take me and maybe I didn't want to. I think he felt the traits because he felt after all he went through. He didn't want to go after all he went through with the dog and everything else. And he had, the whole thing became, for none, as we say.
For naught, yeah.
For naught. So he was very upset with that. And but the Rebbeinu Shlomo is pointing out here to him, what are you so upset? Here's a kikoyim that is also probably at the same level as the behemoth.
Right.
You got so... So really, in such a jovial mood and in such a happiness that it brought you, I mean, so why are you blaming me then if I'm not destroying these people that are so, really don't know much? Or I'm in the same, all in the same level as the Kikoyan.
So you're saying that the Behemoth, Hashem,
people,
right.
And the Kikoyan are here on the same level.
Right, Hashem is saying that everything in this world has a Tachlis. Whether it be a Kikoyan, just like you saw a Tachlis in a bush, you saw a purpose in the creation of a bush, so too I see a purpose in the creation of humans and animals. And if I can get the humans and animals to serve a proper purpose, so it's worth it for me.
Yeah, but what's actually,
is that what you're saying?
How would you describe this?
The way the Malbim explains it, I don't think anybody else explains it. The way the Malbim explains it is that they don't know what's right and what's wrong.
They don't know what's right.
They were never given the Torah to know what's right and what's wrong. Not that they were incapacitated because of some limited mental capacity, but that they don't know because they were never taught. They were ignorant.
Does the Behemoth
know? No, you're right. A Behemoth won't know even if you teach it. That's true. That's right. Well, that's why Rashi says that there are two levels here. Ashaliyoda ben Yamin Smolo is one type of man, and Behemoth Rabba is also another kind of man, an even lower level of man. So, you know, according to Rashi, both of them are talking about human beings, and one is even lower, yeah. So, but you're right, a Behemoth, regardless, will never be expected, there's no difference between right and wrong. But I want to pick up on what you were saying here, which is that everything is supposed to have a tachlis. That's an important point to make, and I want to show you here this very interesting Rebtzadik. If you take a look here on this page, at Tzidka Satzadik, he talks here a great deal about Gilgal in this Reish Mem here, Tzidka Satzadik. I don't want to see about Gilgal tonight because it's really not our topic, even though it is fascinating what he writes. But what I do want to see here is starting in the second column, the fifth line from the top, the first word in the line is Bevada, Ubevadai. Bevadai ish chalukas bekochas habemis, there certainly must be distinctions in the animal forces. Perish b'koch nefesh b'amiyusan, in the powers of the souls of the different animals. Uvorin yadon, and God knows this, them. Ki yifshar adam lasik hevdelon, man cannot distinguish between the different animals what their different traits and purposes are. Me'achar she'elem das, because animals have no intellect, shuramavdi, which normally is what distinguishes. In other words, what makes me understand the difference between you and you is the difference in your intellect. Intellect is perhaps not the right word. Das doesn't translate well. The difference in your psyche, in your character, in everything that is represented by the sum total of your collected thoughts, emotions, and so therefore the difference is in your das. Each person has a different das than everybody else. By animals you can't see. Commercial animals are the main day. If there's no das, how can you distinguish? So therefore, we can't distinguish between a dog and a lion. We can physically, but we don't know the essential difference because we don't. There's no das. There's no expression of intellect, of thought, and emotion different in a lion than in a dog that we should know the difference between the two. It really is hard for us to know, and certainly between German shepherds and dachshunds. Why do we know the difference between the two of them? But there must be a difference. They look different. By definition, there must be a difference between the two of them. There must be some distinction. Amazing thing. And the proof he brings down is that you can tell because their flesh tastes different. If they taste different, and so too in a human being, each human being has a different nefesh behemoth, a different physical characteristic than his fellow man. And therefore, when a man, again, this gets back to what we talked about previously in the paragraph, when a man enters an animal as a gilgal, he enters an animal, he enters an animal which is on a level, on par with him, based on the type of maisa behema, the type of animal act, the type of avera which he committed. In other words, according to the principle of Gilgul, when a man is mugulga, an animal, he takes on the form of an animal which expresses the trait with which he sinned. For instance, if he sinned with great brazenness, let's say chutzpah, then he would become a dog. If he sinned, dogs are associated with brazenness. If he sinned with great speed and alacrity, he might take on the form of a leopard, which goes very speedy and very quick, etc., etc., right? So in any event, vishamati, and I heard, and whenever Reb Tzadok says vishamati, we assume it's from his Rebbe, the Ishbitzer, ki mikol ma'ale adam, this is a remarkable statement, from all deeds of an individual, perush pulo sav, in other words, his activities, shelo b'miskaven, even if he doesn't, even if they're not intentional, ima tova, if they're good activities, notes are bal chai tor, then a good animal is created. Can you imagine that? What this Lord the Ishbitzer is saying? If you do a mitzvah, then a cow is born somewhere. It's a remarkable statement. Ura, if you do an avera, bal chai tome, then a pig is born somewhere, if it's a negative trait, negative act. Why should this be so? Because man is a composite and a miniature of the entire creation. Everything comes from the power or from the capacity of man. And all the strengths and aspects of animals are from the koch of man. And since they come from the power of man, by definition, every animal must be distinct. That was a remarkable statement he's making here. I want to expand on this. Look, before I go on, this is mind-boggling what he's saying. I'm certainly not taking the achrayus to tell you that this is the mainstream view in Judaism. Probably isn't. However, it's a very interesting perspective. He says, by definition, every animal must be different. Spot and Fido are not the same. Two dogs. Why? Because if everything in the Bria is contingent on the Maisim of Klal Yisrael, that means that Spot came about because of Avera X, let's say, or Mitzvah X for that matter, of the Jew. Whereas Fido came about by Avera X, or Mitzvah X, of another Jew, or even the self-same Jew, but it has a completely different characteristic. Because it corresponds to a completely different act. And everything has to do with the Maisim of Jews. The amount and extent of animals in the world, according to the Tzaddik, and their nature is in direct proportion to the deeds of a human being. Now, this is a step further than most Mekubalim. Most Mekubalim say, with every mitzvah a Jew does, it causes a tikkun olam hasal yoinim, right? It makes the spiritual world holier, or it causes ruination in the olam hasal yoinim. It defiles spiritual worlds. So it says, it's much more than that. There's a direct correlation. It might be through the spiritual world back down again, but there's a direct correlation with the between the physical makeup of the Bria in its most minute and precise details and deeds of Jews. And this is not, as I said, this is not necessarily mainstream view in Judaism. We know the Rambam would argue vehemently on this. The Rambam holds that how could there's no connection between deeds of human beings and deeds of animals. And animals have no ashkocha whatsoever, according to the Rambam. They're not under God's direct control. And I would not hesitate to say that certainly they have nothing to do with the mitzvahs and averus of Klal Yisrael. Yet here it's sort of saying precisely that. That every animal corresponds to a mitzvah avera of a Jewish person. And he says, uvavali chayim ukfiyoso makochos shel adam shenotsu machmoso, and based also on the kochos of the individual, corresponding to whom this animal was created, kahu gilgul anefesh, so too is the gilgul of a soul, sheshakur boso koch parbara, of a soul which is in that animal, which has to do with that koch and ra. In other words, his sin was just similar to the sin which you committed, and when you created that animal, you created a place for this nefesh to come down, be gilgul in this animal. And with pure kosher animals, since they're created from the good side, the asim mele adam shaloba miskavin, which comes to man unintentionally, also adam atmo, and probably, this is an amazing statement, this animal will be therefore be eaten either by that individual, Ola ben Gilo, or somebody similar to him, Sheshul Gamkin also Koch Betov, and who also has that capacity for good, also Koch Atzmo. So that power itself, Yuchal Lachlitz and Hashomahi, can redeem a soul, Hashkur Boso Koch Bara, who is enveloped in that power of evil. In other words, and there's certain Hashomahs, although they have to go to Gilgul, they merit being Megulgul in an animal which is kosher, so when somebody eats them with Shem Shemayim, they uplift the souls which are in that Megulgul, in that animal. You know, that's a big thing by the Rebbes who have Tish, right, who make Tish. I think that's one of the reasons they eat fish, if I'm not mistaken, because fish, there's some reason more souls are Megulgul as fish than anything else. More what?
No,
I don't know what the reason is, maybe. I don't know. Yeah, but I'm not sure that relates to the Gugulim. But in any event, so when the tzaddik eats the food, the Shem Shemayim means male all the neshamos, he uplifts them all the neshamos which are present in that food stuff, and brings it to a higher level, kind of rectifies it. Alright, you know, a Gilgul is something which I don't know that much about, and I wasn't bringing this down for the Gilgul aspect. What I was bringing this down for is perhaps to give us more perspective on this last pasuk. And as you know, my perspective on Yonah is that we don't learn Yonah, nor is Yonah read in Yom Kippur, in order to teach us anything about Nineveh. Ultimately, according to the Malbim, they didn't even do complete tshuva. So what are we trying to learn from Nineveh? That we should do partial tshuva. that it's good that we'll do partial tshuva in the, you know, we'll leave behind the theft, but we'll still be able to have a zara and megali arayas. What else are we supposed to learn? That if we do tshuva, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will leave us alone, will give us continued existence. What kind of existence do they get? They got existence to be imminently lose everything because they're going to be destroyed after they go destroy Klal Yisrael. Bear in mind, we've mentioned this before, that Nahum, a couple of prophets later, is going to come and prophesy great destruction for Nineveh. There's not much to be gained out of the moral of Nineveh themselves. Ultimately, the Ninevites were a great failure. They didn't learn any lesson. They just got a stay of execution, and they used it to go and destroy Klal Yisrael. That lot of good that did them. So I don't believe that the moral of the story is to teach us anything about Nineveh and Nineveh's tshuva. And I don't believe that's the purpose of the last two psukim either. Rather, what the purpose of the last two psukim is to tell Yonah and tell us that everything in the world is created with a purpose. And even animals, perhaps they don't have an independent purpose, but they are reflection, they're a barometer of the mitzvahs and aveiros of Klal Yisrael, like Reb Tzadok is saying. Animals too. Animals have no direct purpose in the Bria, but they indicate something. The more kosher animal, the way Reb Tzadok phrased it, although we can say variation on that theme, is that the more kosher animals, the more mitzvahs. The more treif animals, the more aveiros. But that's not germane to our issue, what exactly they symbolize. The bottom line is that animals, according to what Hashem is saying here, if I understand it correctly, and this is only my understanding, animals also are a reflection of some master plan in the universe. Animals also have to do with Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael is also enjoined to make sure that animals are animals which are doing the purpose which HaKadosh Baruch Hu created them. If we know exactly what it is, then we should do exactly what we're supposed to do. If we don't know exactly, at least in the ballpark, by being good, we may let everything else will work out fine. Now, if we're good, then the animals will also, everything will be fine as well. You know that, I think I've told you that the animals by the Mabul were destroyed because they too were corrupt. And the animal kingdom follows mankind mystically and spiritually, and if mankind is good, then the animal kingdom is good. If mankind is bad, then the animal kingdom is bad. And of course, the famous example of that is, or most infamous, is that in San Francisco, there's a higher incidence of homosexuality among birds than the rest of the country. So, this is, I saw the news. Mole Baina Risi Lo Amati, I saw a newspaper clipping on this, and in fact, this is the case. This is Mamash Yad Hashem. You see that the animal kingdom reflects the nature of the local population. So in any event, here too, Hashem is telling Yonah, listen, Yonah, let's get back to the beginning of the Sefer. You're sent to this world, especially you, Yonah, as we mentioned way back when, from Zvulun and from Asher, the seafarers, the people who go down and communicate with the other nations. You can't just regard the rest of the world as something to steamroller over. You have to understand that your purpose in this world is to be Mekadesh Shem Shemayim and get people to do tshuva. Now, it's true that here wasn't complete tshuva. And it's true, therefore, that ultimately this tshuva is going to turn out to be bad for Nineveh. Because Nineveh ultimately is going to use this tshuva to destroy Klal Yisrael and to have all the more terrible destruction wrought upon them as well. But that doesn't change the nature of what I'm trying to teach you and teach Klal Yisrael by association. It's important to be chas on the entire world. Not just on Jews. Certainly on Jews. Not just on goyim, even on goyim, but even on animals, because they also represent part of God's master plan. So what we're telling Yonah in this parak, in this sefer, and what we tell ourselves on Yom Kippur is that we have a task in this world. The task we have in this world, as difficult as it is at times, and sometimes it might even seem to us to be at cross purposes to what we should be doing. Yonah thought, for sure you shouldn't get Asher to do tshuva, because if it gets Asher to do tshuva, it would be bad for Klal Yisrael. Hashem says to Yonah, that's not your cheshbon. Your cheshbon is to realize that everything in this world has a purpose. And if you, on this kikoyon, you were so mitzdar, you were so chas, which is basically meaning, basically, no, should have no value whatsoever to you. Certainly think other things into which far more effort has gone in creating and maintaining, and which are much more significant. It's important to be chas on everything. And with that, the sefer ends. Everything has a purpose, and everybody has to be aware of achieving that purpose in the Bria. And Yonah, obviously, at this point, didn't understand that. And we have no clue as to whether Yonah ever learned the lesson or not, because the Sefer just ends after this rebuke. But Hashem comes and says, I think that perhaps is part of the last parak, going back and forth between Midas Hadin, Midas Harachamim, Midas Hadin, and then Midas Harachamim. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Yonah, Midas Hadin is my chayim. Whether I choose to act with Midas Hadin or not is mine. But you have to emulate my Midas Harachamim. And therefore, it's important for you to know that your destiny is to go out and call out to everybody else, to Klai Yisrael, to go and do, to Klai Yisrael for sure, but even the goyim and even the animals to do tshuva. And that's important. And that's what he's saying to Yonah, to go and, that's what he's saying to Yonah and to all of us by extension, because obviously this is a nevuah shenichtava ledoros, a nevuah which is written down in Tanakh, has an eternal message, and the eternal message here is to make sure, as many people as you can, you show the light of tshuva and maisim tovim, and bring them to achieve the purpose for which they were created as well. Gmar chasima tovah.